Just in terms of the procedure, because the two full members of the DA are here, and Mr. Blanche as the alternate, so is the agreement that's okay. And the second is Mr. Matali. Okay. Any further nominations? None. So in the absence of any further nominations, I declare that Ms. Maseko has been elected unanimously as the chairperson of this committee for the duration of this parliamentary term. Congratulations, and you may take the chair.
Thank you very much. Maybe let's finish the other formalities. Good morning, honorable members, officials from the department, and our guests. Firstly, I would like to thank you for the election. Thank you, honorable de Blanche. Thank you and everybody else. I am humbled by the nomination or the election, and I will do my best to ensure that we continue the good work of this committee and probably take it to higher heights. But and I know that with your cooperation, all of you, we will ensure that we do justice to the committee. Thank you once again. Thank you. We will ask Dr. Thomas to do the introduction, but we convene this meeting to ensure that after the public hearings that we had at the beginning of the year last month, that we get a summary and also the input from the department on the submissions from those who came to make submissions. And how do they intend ensuring that we incorporate some of the issues that were raised from the bill, and also identifying common areas that were presented by different persons that came to make submissions. And then our state law advisor will be coming. She's just in another meeting, but who is standing in for her? Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I didn't get the name, sir.
Sean van Breda.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Van Breda is here to listen and also to guide from there. We hope that by next month we should be done with the bill. We will have, I think the next meeting will be just the state law advisor and our legal advisor. On how to go about the bill, and then we'll have our deliberations and discussions and then adoption of the bill with the amendments that have been brought to our attention. We will also have a joint meeting with the DTI and with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, and we'll invite the department also to make a submission so that We look at the issues of the IPLAP Act, and believing that we don't need a lot of legislation and acts on the same issue, how can we go about incorporating that intellectual property right into the IKS bill or whatever, but I think it is. We need to have a common understanding an agreement, believing that whatever we do, the bill is supposed to make the lives of the people that we are here to represent easier, so that they are not sent from pillar to post just to get one certificate. So if all is housed in one, it is much better for us. Maybe let us start with the introductions for those who do not know. My name is Lindwe Masebo. As you've heard, I've just been elected the chairperson of the committee and being thankful and grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nokuzola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Agnes Stack, and I'm from the committee.
Kassel Matale, committee member.
Nick Kournoff, committee member.
Mr. Blanche, I represent the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, Annelie Lautrit, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chantal King, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson, good morning, members. I'm Barbara Lewis, I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Congratulations on your election as chair of the committee. I think it's a vote of confidence in your leadership. Good morning, honourable members. It's good to see you all again after the break. I know it's been an interesting start to the year, but I wish all of you and the committee as a whole a productive and prosperous year. My name is Thomas Hofterheider. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology.
My name is Yona Seleti. I'm from the Department of Science and Technology, responsible for science missions.
Good morning. My name is Tom Suknandan from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Shumi Pango from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning. I'm Charlene Munsami from the Department of Science and Technology.
My name is Khonto Motori from Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning. I'm Thando Xolo Potoman, committee assistant.
Morning, Chairperson and members. I'm Sean van Breda from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, honorable members and everybody. My name is Carol van Wyk. I'm from the Department of Science and Technology.
Morning, everybody. I'm Taslima Fulyun from the Department of Science and Technology.
Mavalugan from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher. And I'm from CBNIT.
Luyanda France, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry. Sorry, members, I'm just busy with this presentation here.
Good morning, Shanaz Isaacs, Committee Secretary.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, there's a problem with the connection. So we do have the document. Dr. Thomas will start, and Dr. Seleti will continue with the presentation. As soon as it comes on, they'll be busy. In the meantime, then we continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. I think this is a good way to start until the electronics get sorted out. Honourable Chair, honourable members, this is another milestone in the finalisation of this bill, an important one where you have invited the department to present to you its comments on a wide range of submissions that have been made to the committee on this bill. I have seen the documentation, and it certainly was extensive. I don't know how many public submissions parliamentary committees normally get, but it seemed to me that there was an extensive interest in this particular one, and some very deep interest and concern as well, as well as also a lot of, I think, quite supporting inputs from members of the public. Dr. Seleti will lead the presentation to the Portfolio Committee of the Department's comments in this regard, but I wish to assure you that on our side, we have considered these very carefully, and we have also considered the Department's comments to the Portfolio Committee in close conjunction with our own legal services division. So this is not just something that has come from in the IKS division, but we have made sure that legal input has been obtained on these as well, wherever that was relevant, of course. I am very happy to defer today now to the wisdom of my colleagues on this, and if, with your permission, I would then like to hand over to Dr. Seleti to start the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas.
Jonah, come in here. I'll move. Come in here.
Dr. Seleti.
Thank you.
And I think if you remember, most of the presentation, there was positive interest on from most of those who made the presentation. But Dr. Seleti will take us through this. Over to you, Dr. Seleti.
Thank you, Chair, and we consider this to be a privilege to be able to provide you with the analysis of what the comments came in. We will also probably wonder as to how much time you would be giving to me, because you have two documents. One is 82 pages long, and I have a presentation. So if we probably could agree on what sort of time frame are you giving me, 30 minutes, or is it 40 minutes to make the presentation?
How long do you think you need?
I think I could go through the 29 to 30 slides in about 30 to 40 minutes.
Right. Yeah. It's okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Probably you all know this particular background, Chair, about the oral presentations and all that. Just to indicate that they were 20 written documents and 21 oral presentations which were given. And we've had to plow through that. Looking through the presentations, we thought that we should approach it by giving a thematic approach to it so that we can look at the issues that were raised rather than go into each presentation responding to each one of the comments. So we propose to do a thematic approach to this. In looking at the thematic approach, it appears to us in looking at this that there were about 5 to 6 interest groups, and the comments have come through with that emphasis from the different interest groups. What is it that they were putting across as part of their contribution? By and large, the comments as well were all constructive with a view of improving the bill. So we think that the proposal that were made would go a long way in closing some of the gaps that were identified. And so we'll begin with looking at the different interest groups and indicating where we're coming from. In the process of being shifted around, I've lost my space. I don't know where my bag probably, Tom. But I'll begin with the first group is industry. In industry, there were a number of areas which were of concern to them. I think the biggest one is the issue of benefit sharing. It appears this is quite an issue with them, and so we've looked at that aspect. The second one, which came through industry, was the issue of sanctions. There was some indication of sanctions. And then the third one was exceptions and limitations, which had been looked at. And then there was the issue of ownership as part of that process. And then the duration of the protection. Those were the issues which were raised by the business community. I'd want to move on to indicate that one of the key issues is what was opened, the comments by the chair of issues of permits and license agreements so that people can understand around not being shifted to different places and all that. So that is the last concern of business around the distinction between permits and license agreements, and we'll address those when we go on. Then there was a second group of interests that was in that category, and these were legal and academia fraternity. The legal and fraternity community did make comments, but much of them was to affirm the bill, and they had one concern, an overwhelming concern from that community, was the recommendation of the repeal of IPLA. And that's from the academia and the legal fraternity. Then there was a question of the third group of interest, is that there is a territorial overlap between the different departments in terms of the issues, the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Department of Trade and Industry, and the Department of Science and Technology. And how do we manage those overlaps? The overlaps were in two areas, that of mandates and that of licenses and permits. So that's an issue that needs to be addressed in the areas that we're looking at. Then there was a fourth group of interests, and this came from the COI and the SAN. And by and large, the issues that we were raising were not issues pertaining to this bill. There were issues pertaining to their quest for self-determination and recognition. And to that extent, there was no direct comments on any one of the clauses that were read. So it is difficult to address those issues in this bill, because this bill is not meant for that purpose. Then the knowledge holders were the fifth category. They were more concerned about registration. The process of registering their knowledge as provided for in the bill. And there was a confusion whether it was compulsory or it was voluntary. And the clarification within the bill has been made quite clear that this is a voluntary aspect, and so the proposals would be to do that. The key element is that without registration, there cannot be enforcement. And also, in as much as it is voluntary, it's a necessity. If you want your knowledge to be protected, then it has to be registered. So, and then you cannot legislate that which is voluntary to say we must make it compulsory. So that's the balance that has to be struck between the different interest groups. And there was also a concern that the different kinds of registrations, the Department of Health with the Traditional Health Practitioners Act requires them to register their practice. So it's a difference. It's their practice as traditional health practitioners. In this particular case, they are registering their knowledge. And so there's quite a distinction between the different registrations. And it is indeed was looked at. Then the sixth group was those of innovation and invention. Basically, should indigenous knowledge enter into the realm of innovation and the like, what are the provisions within the legislation for protection of the inventor and the protection of the knowledge holders? That was the sixth issue raised. And then the last one was on education and promotion. A couple of professors from these universities raised the issue of curriculum and the expectation of curriculum, and another community from Northwest also contributed to that discussion around. So this is the context in which we are providing the responses, that these are the interest groups that have projected their issues and contribution to the bill. So, and I want to underline that most of them and the issues raised save to improve the clarity and legal certainty of the bill. So we felt very encouraged by the comments that were given. So I will now take you through the issues in a bit of more detail. In the pack that you have, on the top will be the issues raised, and then in black on the presentation will be the attempted proposals for responding. And on the right, in blue, are all the interest groups that actually address the issues so that we can match between who said what and how we are going to address that. So that's the approach that we are taking through. So I'll begin with the definition of indigenous communities. This concern is a definitional concern, but the response that we're providing is that it is not a novelty in this bill. It has been based on other international conventions, such as Nagoya Protocol, and to that extent, we also looked at IPLA. So we have also made sure that it wasn't contradictory to what IPLA had provided. So it is an accepted definition. So probably we're not saying that we're going to change anything in that area. So I would move on to the second issue, and that is the perceived powers of NICSO. And we have this issue on two slides. The first one is probably in the wording that was provided in Section 26.2 could have not been so clear, but the colleagues have made a proposal to make it clear that NICSO cannot own indigenous knowledge. NICSO cannot enter into agreements with users of that knowledge. NICSO is a facilitator, and that has been made quite clear in this particular case. So that that clarity sought after can be made clear. The second one is on the following slide, refers to NICSO entering into license agreements. And I said earlier on, NICSO cannot, and there's no provision for it to enter into license agreements. NICSO is not an owner of any knowledge. NICSO is not an indigenous knowledge practitioner. And therefore, the people that enter into these agreements must be holders or trustees of the indigenous knowledge or practitioners of the indigenous knowledge, and NICSO is not or any of those. So that clarity has been sorted out in Section 26.1b as part of that particular issue. The next issue that is important, it's not only important in this bill, it's an international area of concern on eligibility and protection. And this, the question was to change the criteria that had been put in there. And the team is very convinced and is of the view that the criteria, the characteristics that are used in there must remain. I wish to just maybe explain a couple of philosophical approaches to this particular issue. One
if you narrowly list each category of indigenous knowledge that is put in there, you are likely going to miss some other categories. And you know how the legal system operates. Anything that is left out then will not qualify because it's excluded. So it's better to provide a definition that is tight enough but allows for flexibility. And that's what we have chosen, the latter approach in the issue of the eligibility and the protection of the indigenous knowledge. Moving on to the next issue of accreditation and certification. This is a pillar within the bill, and it's an important pillar. It is really emphasizing the fact that indigenous knowledge practitioners don't go to formal schools which certify. They normally go through their different schools of life and ways of teaching them, and therefore the focus is on the recognition of prior learning. It is also an issue of redress. Other knowledge systems which have been left out of our South African qualification authority system needs to be brought in. So that's what this is about. It's it is a facilitating activity, and it's a redress issue, but allows for equivalence so that the standards are not compromised in terms of the requirements of the educational system. So that's what this is all about, and therefore in this particular case, the clarity that was being sought from NICSO was that this is around recognition of, so it will lead to qualifications, not the service or the practice. It's around the qualification. So it's a knowledge domain, and therefore it needs to be in the bill from that perspective. So the response is that Section 15(1) of this bill proposes an amendment just to make sure that this legal certainty is assured around the difference between practice and the knowledge, as I have emphasized. So that is the specific context of the issues that have been raised. There is one that refers to indigenous knowledge practitioner. And members, you will remember that this was being raised from a company perspective. If a company has registered this knowledge and has a license agreement, can it qualify as an indigenous knowledge practitioner? And the issue is no, it cannot, because it is not a knowledge order. The definition as provided for which one I just spoken to on the eligibility criteria cannot qualify a company as an owner of that. So that's it's consistent with the provision that of eligibility. And so that was the issue concerned on that. We have raised the issue of registration, that the knowledge holders have been concerned about this, and they've sought clarity in terms of what is it that is going to be protected. And the key element I've emphasized is that it's voluntary, it's not compulsory, there are no sanctions for people who don't register, it's only that they would forego the benefits that come with protection. And that is an important part. As much as it is a necessity that they must register, the onus and the responsibility is on the knowledge holders to register their knowledge for it to be protected. I think that's the key issue around that on the registration. Then the issue was if the knowledge, the second issue on registration, if the knowledge had already been used in the commercial exploitation and then this law comes into force, what happens to that knowledge? So the provision was that within that 12 months, if they continue to use that knowledge in the commercial sense, then they must use the transitional period to enter into benefit-sharing agreements and getting into new license agreements with the knowledge holders. So it's a question of not allowing the exploitation without benefits to the communities. And that's what the bill is, its intention is not, it's to regulate and normalize that practice so that both parties, the exploiter and the community that have the knowledge, benefit from that. So the provision here is indeed to make that legal certainty that this is the way it ought to be. So that's the thrust of that input. And there was a lot of comment, as you can see on your right side. There were a lot of people that spoke also around that issue. So the BU will ensure that both parties benefit from that. Now, there was the question of accessing the register by the public. The register being referred to here is that when people register their knowledge, there will be a catalog. This is an electronic digital system. People can access that. They can access a catalog title, but they may not access the contents because that content is what's being protected. That content is what you can use once you have an agreement. And therefore, it can't be that everyone else can have access. Then there would be no licensing agreement required if everyone can access that knowledge. There would be no protection given to that knowledge if everyone else can access it without proper procedural processes to be followed. So that's the gist of that query, accessing of the register, and they can access the catalog, know what it is, but they can't access the content thereof because that is what is protected. And so I'll move on to the next one. Around funds, all this is about money, but in terms of the bill itself, it's not focusing on the money. That has to be, it has four legs. Promotion, protection, development, and management. And so that creates a balance. So it's not just around the commercial side of it. However, the issue is that we do have the PFMA and as the guide. And at the moment, there is a fund that has been established, and it sits in the Department of Environmental Affairs. And in terms of that particular fund, it's in granting access to the biological resources. When you get a permit and there is benefits that come out of that, that fund is there. So in this particular bill, there is no proposal of building a fund because we will work with the Treasury to ensure that we do not have too numerous funds, which can confuse. So we'll work with the Department of Environmental Affairs and with the Department, with the National Treasury in ensuring that this particular area is streamlined and is a one-stop shop around that. And so well, that's the response that we have provided for that. Just to make sure that this is understood, NICSO is not going to keep separate funds from these processes. Once there's a license agreement facilitated by NICSO, when the benefits come, they go to the knowledge or to the trustees and not to NICSO. So NICSO is a facilitator. It's more playing the role of a regulator to make sure that these things happen in accordance to the law. Penalties and criminal and sanctions. This was a good point that was raised by the one of the professional legal concerns that in intellectual property rights, we don't normally refer to criminal. These are civil issues. And so we've taken that into consideration, acknowledged that point, and made appropriate proposals in that direction. In terms of the next one on IP, intellectual property developed out of the indigenous biological resources. Again, in this particular area, if the intellectual property rights refers to the patents, trademarks, because it has moved into that arena, the legal framework of the country has made provision for that. No, it's not IPLA, but already the Patent Act, and they have made provision for that. So it is not an arena that is new and novel. However, what is important is the acknowledgement of the use of indigenous knowledge in that invention and the making of the appropriate arrangements for the benefit sharing agreements for the knowledge practitioners. And that is the consistency, and that's the protection that is being suggested. So if you go for a patent, doesn't mean that you're exempt from that process. And that's what is made very, very clear. So that's the issue that was being raised by that. And then there is a transborder application. This is different from the transitional arrangements. Now, in the transborder arrangements, as the members are all aware, we have quite a lot of boundaries and the same people, the Swanas, or if you go on the Swazis, Basutus, and all that. Now, the provision of this clause is that the knowledge that we are protecting in South Africa, if there is a bilateral agreement with Lesotho, should be able to be protected in Lesotho. The same, if the knowledge is from Lesotho and it is being used within South Africa and we have bilateral agreements where we recognize these legal arrangements, then South Africa should be able to protect that knowledge from Lesotho that is being used in South Africa. So people should not just cross borders and expect that they can go and use the knowledge from another country into another country without the benefit. The purpose from our perspective here is that South African knowledge should be protected even if it is used in other places. So that's the reason why this transborder application is put in there. It is really a facilitation between governments to deal with that. The issue of territorial overlap, I have introduced it, and it was raised by quite a number of people, but probably a way of walking you into this particular distinction between the two different agreements, the permits granted by the Department of Environmental Affairs and the license agreements through this particular bill. So there are two bills, NEMBA and the IK bill. This is probably the way, best way to walk you through it. The NEMBA is access to biological resources. It is the beginning of the process. And what they do is they grant you a permit to that you have access to that biological resource. And they give you a permit whatever amounts you want from that, so that is clear. Now, moving on, and that could apply to any biological resources, whether it has indigenous knowledge or not. That's the standard legal framework of the country. But where indigenous knowledge is involved, then it invokes the benefit-sharing agreements. And that process, beginning with the benefit-sharing agreements, ends up with a product being developed, and that requires a license agreement because now it's being commercialized. It's going into the market. So it is access at the beginning and then exit into the market at the end. And so these permits are necessary. You can't collapse them into one. But what you could do is have one office that can manage the process. And so this is the proposal that is being put across that the two departments responsible for this already work together. I have colleagues sitting with me here who sit on those permits granting even in the Department of Environmental Affairs as we stand now. So it's a question of creating a one-stop shop for both of these. And I think this has been a critical issue. Pardon me if I spent a little more time on this, but it's really to make sure that this is understood, that one is the beginning and the other one is at the entry into the markets, and that these two are necessary. So this has covered the two slides, page 19 and 18, and then the next one came through submissions that were overly political, concerned more with land issues and all that. But in the context of what they were saying, you could take out some important aspects. That they were worried about their culture being preserved for posterity. And to that extent, some of that information has been extracted from that, that it needs to be addressed, and that this bill indeed does address the preservation of culture for posterity, and therefore that they should be assured that in terms of this particular bill, it will make that provision for that culture, for their ancestral knowledge and ancestral wisdom to be preserved for posterity as such. So that's, I think that's one of the key elements of the bill, is to ensure that those that want to continue with that lifestyle continue and they are protected. And so the issues that have been raised do conform to that, and we have made that kind of clarity clear. This particular issue of access to resources, I have addressed that, and it came largely from the Cape Bush doctors, and the context of it is that there's no country in the world that will let such resources without being brought under some form of regulation. And so the Department of Environmental Affairs, that has the responsibility of managing these biological resources, have made provision for legal part of this. And therefore, we're just making sure that this bill does not contradict that act that promotes the conservation and regulates that. They are complementary. Then we move on to the area of exceptions and limitations, largely pushed by the private sector companies around that. One of them was to seek exceptions for publications with indigenous knowledge. Now, in the exception and limitations, these are actually quite international if you look at copyright, the different kinds of provisions. So what this bill has put on the table are actually standard copyright exceptions and limitations, and therefore the proposals that were put across on the table were not accepted. So we'll stick to what has been put, we propose that we stick to what has been put in the bill, because that is benchmarked with other international provisions around the reproduction of information. And so the two, PASA and Professor Eric Van Veek, who spoke to that, have been addressed in that concern. The issues of concern around health regulations, and quite a lot of them, but the clear message is that this bill does not deal with health regulations. This bill deals with indigenous knowledge. And therefore, these concerns that have been raised will definitely be picked up in other legislations that deal with them. Probably one of the observations is that we cannot use this bill to deal with everything that is not right. This bill is specific and must focus on the knowledge indigenous knowledge. So that's what is contained in that area. And then the big question, the big elephant in the room, is about the repeal of IPLA. As said, is the legal fraternity were concerned about the relationship between bills, and the academia who study these things are the ones who have made the proposal that the, in the best interest of the country, IPLA should be repealed. Now, from the Department of Science and Technology, probably the message that will be sent to the portfolio committee is that we can't put this in this bill, that this bill repeals IPLA, because that responsibility is with the Department of Trade and Industry. And therefore, the advice or the proposal is that this committee should engage probably the two ministers at a higher level so that this could be initiated as a discussion. But from the level of the bill, the provision of the bill, this bill cannot propose that. It has to be the ones that manage that bill who come up with that particular process. Having said that, at the official level, we are into discussions with the Department of Trade and Industry around what has come through this process in terms of the necessity or the need to repeal IPLA. And so we are not just sitting back and watching what's happening. We have started some discussions with our colleagues, and we will continue to pursue that. And we will inform the committee appropriately if we do have some breakthrough within that issue. Probably the other one should be moving closely to the end, realignment and issues of clarity around the definition of indigenous knowledge. This was a very smart comment made by Professor Owen Dean in his comments. He picked up the need for consistency in the way in which this, and this is accepted. It actually improves the quality of the legislation. So I will not even spend much time on that which has been accepted. And this is the presentation we thought we should give to you, pick up the key sticky points that came through the public consultations and also the provision on that. The 82-page document contains a lot of the details and some suggested language that could be used by our legal colleagues from the parliamentary committee to readjust the bill, as the bill is now the responsibility of parliament. We couldn't go to the bill and make changes to the bill. So we thought we could just provide the two inputs, this oral presentation, and then a detailed document that would cover the issues in detail. And that's what we have done. So I wish to thank you for giving the department the opportunity to respond to these comments, but also to register the department's appreciation of the process, and that the comments were by and large very useful to the process. They contributed to legal certainty that is required in terms of the finalization of the document. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chuleti. On the presentation, I think, honorable members, this presentation simplifies and breaks down the inputs that were given and the submissions at the public hearings, and it puts it into perspective and context. Yeah, as you said in the beginning, we will be engaging with the Department of Trade and Industry, so just to probably take forward the issues that you've started discussing with your colleagues there, and get a also a buy-in, an agreement, yes. And because as you said, even during the public hearings and the pre-public hearings, is that we are a unitary state. We are about improving the lives of the people, so we cannot work in silos. We need to come together and agree to what is best for the people of South Africa, and that will also benefit the border, the continent, so that we indeed ensure that better Africa and a better world. I just want to find out, you spoke of a 82-page document. This one that we have here is a 62-page.
Oh, 62.
Is it the same 62 and
82? Yes, it's the when they change the fonts. So that's the document I'm referring to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Teplach?
Thanks, Jefferson. My area of concern is actually also on the page area of concerns, page 17 and 18 of the document that we have on the blue document. You say on an operational level the DST will work with the Departments of Environmental Affairs, Trade and Industry and Health to establish a one-stop shop model through the National Recordal System, which will streamline activities under their respective pieces of legislation to avoid duplications, contradictions, and possible overlaps. Chairperson, through you, I think we should also have a meeting with the Department of Environmental Affairs, because I've got a great concern already, and that's why I say under areas of concern, because many of these things that are going to happen affects our indigenous plants. And that's exactly why we have this bill. It's about our indigenous knowledge. And if you are up to date with what's happening in the mining industry, you will know that there are illegal mining taking place in wetlands. There are permits being issued. I don't know how it's happening, but there are permits being issued without proper environmental impact assessments being done, without proper wetland impact studies being done, and those mining activities are actually taking place in wetlands. And I'm telling you this now because I've got information about this. We are losing indigenous knowledge about species that has not even been discovered yet. We've got new species in South Africa, butterflies, moths, frogs, etc. The smaller species, I'm not talking about the big five, I'm talking about the small 5,000 and beyond, that have not even been discovered, that we are losing on a daily basis. And while we are doing the difficult process of going through this bill, we might as well tighten up other areas as well in discussions with these departments that are supposed to look after our heritage and our indigenous, the other indigenous areas, because it's no use we fight this fight on the one end and we lose it on the other side. So I'm very, very worried when I read this part, because we have a one-stop shop here, but at the back door, we're losing a lot. So this is of a great concern to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Coronel. Yes. Questions, comments, discussion?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just comment, I want to congratulate the department. I think, you know, if you look at that last document where you see, you know, where they've listened to the comments and the public and then they have amended, I would like to know when we will see the amended version of the bill, you know, because that will show us,
you know, exactly where we stand. But, you know, I think many of the stuff, you know, if you look at Professor Owen Dean's representations, you know, almost everything was accepted because it was good comments in trying to make the bill a better bill. On the IPLA matter, it's not the elephant in the room. It's the officials in the room. That's the problem. And, you know, there's a history to IPLA. The unfortunate thing is that there were no protection for indigenous knowledge, and there was lots of pressure. And then it was taken up by the Department of Trade and Industry to do it, and that's how IPLA was born. Unfortunately, it was unfortunate. It was the correct circumstances, but it was then wrongly protected in terms of IPLA. Now, we have to recognize that, but it's very difficult for some of the officials in trade and industry to recognize that. And, you know, now you can't expect from us, the legislators, to legislate here and then say, this bill, that is clearly the better bill in terms of the protection of indigenous knowledge, will now be under IPLA in terms of section, I think, 32 or whatever. You know, you cannot expect that from us. And then what I want to say, if you've got a headache, you don't go to a gynecologist. You sometimes, yes, but if you're a man, definitely not. What we need is at least meeting of minds by trade and industry and science and technology to have an independent legal opinion on this issue and present it to us. Independent, senior counsel somewhere else, found the money, pay them well, and get a proper, I will tell you what it will be. I think there's no doubt that it will be what we have heard. But if you have got an independent, it will be very difficult for another department to convince us to put a section into this bill where we say IPLA must be the governing bill on if there's a conflict. So that's my suggestion, trying to resolve it. I serve on trade and industry. I'll do my little bit there. But I've seen it. I've seen it is difficult. It's not going to be easy, and we have to work together. There's no battle here. We just want to make good legislation.
Thank you. Just on the issue of slide 17, where you... is the territorial overlaps. The Department of Arts and Culture is not of significance as part of these others. Any other comments? Questions? I think. Okay. Maybe you want to respond to...
The response would be that the comments are very affirmative, very positive comments that have been made. It's something that must be done. It's necessary because definitely we cannot allow a situation where our resources are exploited by using fraudulent means. So we need to tighten up on that. We have an excellent relationship with the Department of Environmental Affairs in almost in every area of our work, and talking about the issues of species and all that is also under my responsibility from the research point of view. So we've hired Sandy to assist us to work around that. So we have really excellent relations, and the department will undertake to tighten up those aspects in a very constructive way in the shortest time possible, and make sure that these things are... But the concern is shared. We really appreciate the input on that. And then the second input is definitely, yeah, it's the officials. And I really... we've been in the process since they started with IPLA, with my colleagues. We participated in that issue. And it's the issue that the Department itself of Trade and Industry is addressing. We're looking forward to the quick address of that issue within the Department of Trade and Industry, which will have benefit to us.
And we've seen that in our link with them, there's quite excellent relationships that are evolving around that. So from our side, we'll do whatever is possible to channel this information until it gets to the attention that it requires at the highest level. But it's an urgent matter looking at your process, so we'll try and see whatever could be done in that context. But from the responsibility of your committee, since now the matter is before you, I'm sure that this is your responsibility as well to push it up. Yeah, thank you very much.
Fair enough. Will we see the amended version?
Yeah. Okay, sure. We had chatted with your legal advisor earlier on, but our understanding was that really that would be the role. But we would want to work closely with the legal advisor to the committee in the final bill. We are as ready as on Friday to begin to work on that. We've done the corrections to the bill itself, but we didn't feel that that was what you had asked us to do. But we are ready to push on that and give you a copy as quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible. can I let me have Honorable Matale for further?
Yeah, in many ways he was saying that it's us who are supposed to make the necessary amendments. But I thought what we should do is to ask our legal team to liaise with them, so that they provide whatever input they will want to. As soon as they communicate, probably because he says by last week he was ready. But if we can make that effort on our side through our legal team, it will be appropriate. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe, yeah, I was going to ask you, Papa, to say something. Then also, Mr. Van Breda, if you want to say something. Let me start with Barbara.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Chair, I know you mentioned that in the next meeting we were going to discuss the process and all of that, but maybe just to, for purposes of this discussion, facilitate. At the end of the actual printed draft copy of a bill that the members will see will be at the end of the process when voted. But what we can start doing with the departments and from the previous work we did with science and technology, that was the process that members can guide me, is we start almost doing a table of a working document, populating it with the comments the department just gave, and then we supplement it as members start discussing and deliberating, so that we take all of those comments into consideration, and then once members tell us the decision is we want that division, a definition, or we want to delete that clause, then we take all of that, we populate it into an A list with listing all those amendments, we give that to CREDA, and they then print a draft B bill upon which members will then vote. But for purposes of discussion, just so that members see the process of all of this now happening, I'll liaise with the department and the state law advisors, and we can start crafting a draft document that we can just supplement with every meeting going forward to capture the debate and the deliberations for a chair and the and the committee members from a drafting perspective, if that will be in order.
Thank you. We're thinking that probably on because the next meeting will be the one that will be a joint committee with trade and industry next week Wednesday. Probably on the 1st of March, if we could have the legal brief on the bill, if it is okay with you, if it's enough time, okay. Honourable members, I'm just referring to the document that that Shanaz has just circulated to ourselves, because it is today is the 15th, and then the next meeting on the committee deliberation, that's the 22nd, proposal of the a joint committee with DTI, and then the first of March being the on the deliberation still on the bill, but we have the legal brief, and then on the 8th of March we continue as a committee to deliberate on the bill, and probably and then on the 15th the committee consideration and finalization of the bill. Other than the presentation on the third quarter financial and non-financial performance, but also the finalization of the bill. If it is okay with yourself, but we will also give you this framework of the committee. Dr. Sletty, you were responding.
It was really just a response for the comments raised that we do have already a bill that we have revised according to the comments. So we are ready anytime. It's already done from our point of view. Yeah, we will liaise with.
Any other comments, honorable members? Honorable Matali?
My hand was not up, Chair, but the face was saying something. No, I was asking myself, the interactions that we had in the past week or the past days on the bill. That's it. We are not going to interact with any other person, like I see here, we are now winding off. I don't have a problem with. I mean, if we as proposed, I agree with the program. But at the same time, I'm asking myself, this fellow who was not able to come to Cape Town to express views or his view on the bill. At what point are they going to participate in it? Because I thought at some point we spoke about something that was going to create a platform for those who might not come to Cape Town to come and make a presentation. Because Cape Town is very far, you know, it's about 2,000 kilometers from my village. So that villager there want to have an opportunity to talk to this from the way it is. And I don't know whether or what happened to, because at some point I thought we were trying to say, let's do, we won't go everywhere because the country is too vast. And we are just few. We had agreed that we will go to this far flung area and this one, and most of the things we'll do here in Cape Town. So I'm not sure whether from what is on the table, it's like that is not going to happen. You know, it's just that I'm asking myself, yet I was supposed to be the one who knows what must be done and what not, must not be done. I don't know it's like I'm asking. That's why I say my hand was not up, Chair. It's just that my face maybe gave me away that I'm talking to myself and I'm not helping the committee with the things that I'm raising. But, yeah, it's just something that is going around my head. Maybe you'll help me. Thank you.
I think we tried to have the public hearing spread in other provinces. The thing was the ask of the rationale why you choose these ones, not these ones. And also I think it was the issue of cost cutting. But we were saying even sorry. During the public hearings, but this process is going to provinces from the NCOP. Provinces can have even more than one area They can have Limpopo one around the Musina one, around Sekhukhune in different regions, so that it can reach out to everybody. So every province will be required to do public hearings. And at that point, as I say, it might be more than one from the provincial perspective, so that it covers the vast areas, especially the big provinces, and don't think also Gauteng is small. It's also got the population thereof, and if it can be done in different regions to try and reach out to especially the rural or peri-urban areas of different provinces, that would be helpful. And probably as members, because the department, I interacted with them to find out about this process, they will try and be or spread themselves to attend different public hearings in different provinces so that they can capture different views that come from there. So I think that is the way to go. But also as members, we will be encouraged to attend any or whether the ones that are nearer to ourselves or any other. Or if you look at ourselves, if you think there's a province that is not represented by one of the members, to make a case that the particular member or any other member attends to those. So we will try and open up as far as possible and plead that we believe this is one of the most important bills dealing with Indigenous knowledge, and that we should be allowed to attend some of these public hearings. But I think even in our meetings back home, whether political meetings or community meetings, that we continue spreading the word that there is this bill that is before Parliament and it will be coming to the provinces. So the people there must make sure that we will let you know whether it's in time where these public hearings are going to be and encourage them to attend. Yes, now your hand is up, Honourable Madala.
And this is really up. I think maybe, Chair, thank you once more. I don't want to make this meeting, to delay the meeting. I accept what is before us, and I accept that we had hearings. But I think as a committee, it will be appropriate for us to note that the public hearing that we had, we are not okay. Personally, I'm suggesting that the committee should agree that we not necessarily agree. I'm suggesting that we, as a committee, we should note that we in terms of how we would have wanted the thing to be, we should have ourselves conducted public hearings in all the provinces, even if it's one public hearing per province. We should have done that because the matter that is before us, it's a matter that is of great importance to the people, to our people, and that we should have been given the necessary resources to conduct this, so that when we submit a report to Parliament, we submit a report that have been inputted, by the affected communities. For example, the Khoisan. You know, there are areas where you find them in the way they were many years ago, untransformed. It would have been good to talk to that to them and to go to the Northern Cape, get an interpreter and get them to talk to the issues that are raised here. Well, not that those we talk to here in Cape Town are not the real thing.
they are, but it will have been good for us to have done that and to have interacted with various communities from all the provinces as far as this bill is concerned. So I'll be, okay, but like I said, it's a proposal. Committee members can say, no, we think the way it is, it's okay. But if as a committee we can have a line that shows that concern, that, you know, we are not really happy the way, you know, like, I hear the resource thing, that there are no resources, but for this bill, we might not have resources for all other bills, but for this one, resources should have been availed for us to interact properly in the public hearings. I hear what you are saying, that, you know, the department must go. The department has done its work. Now they've given us as the public representatives for us to take this to the people. And we should have been accorded that opportunity to do so. But I understand that resources are a constraint, but I think if we, in our report, we can also note that shortcoming and really talk strongly against the fact that we're not given the ability in the form of resources to do as many public hearings as possible on this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Having had the privilege to serve in the National Council of Provinces, and since this is a 76 bill, I think it lies very heavily upon the members of the NCRP to do exactly that, and to not only go out and inform the members of the legislature about this bill, but to also, and they have got the money that they don't usually spend. They go on oversight. They have money to go on oversight, but they also have money to go and do public hearings. And they don't normally use it. I know that for a fact. So they have an excellent opportunity now to go and do public hearings on this very important bill. And I think we must suggest that to them. You, as a chairperson, may make a suggestion to your co-chair on the other side. For them to go and do public hearings in each of the provinces, because they've got members in each of the provinces, and maybe they should go and do a little bit of work on this bill, and because this committee has done their public hearings, and they should do their bit of work on that in the upper house as they should. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honourable Kaplan. And thank you, Honourable Matale, for your concerns. I think in raising that also with part of our motivation, the response also came that as a 76 bill, the NCOP has got to do extensive work on that. I made also an example of, for instance, in Gauteng, even before the public hearings, they go like a week before, just to educate the community so that when they come and make those submissions, they are well informed of what is expected of them. So, and if only all the other the provinces can do that. But I will schedule a meeting with Honourable Prince, who is the chair of that select committee that also includes science and technology, just to bring to our attention that when they plan and they brief members of when they go back to the provinces on the provincial week on briefing them on this bill, they must ensure that extensive public hearings are done. That's why I said also probably not. Let me use Gauteng because I'm more familiar with Gauteng. That you don't have the hearings in the Johannesburg City Hall, but go to Magaliesburg, to Hammanskraal, you know, to the Vaal, the where they are peri-urban areas and where the bill is more likely to have an impact on to do that. But as I say, I will raise also these concerns with Honourable Prince and hope that we will be covered by those.
Okay, Honorable Matali.
I hear you. I agree with what you are saying. I agree with what she's saying. But you see, we are a committee of the National Assembly. And the National Assembly is not Cape Town. The National Assembly represent even people who come from Messina. And those people from Messina, their voices must be heard here through this committee. And this committee can't argue that they have had public hearings, referring to public hearings that took place here in Cape Town. I understand that we couldn't go to other provinces because of resources. That's why I'm proposing to the committee that as a committee, we should raise our concern with the authorities, that the authorities, they have not enabled us to properly do our job effectively. If there are people who raise concerns that we didn't reach them, they complain to, we can't say the NCO people have done that. We should have convened public hearings, for instance, in Northwest. Even if it's one public hearing and we publicize it, those who can't manage to come, we can't say it's their own problem because there will be reasons why they couldn't come. We should be able to do that as this committee because it is our job to interact with the public before we go and report back at the National Assembly. It's not correct for us to have a public hearing here and claim we have had public hearings that people have participated throughout the country. It's not appropriate. I understand when you say because of resources and other things, we couldn't go to other areas to get the public hearings done. I understand and I accept that. But we can't, as this committee, say somebody else, we must encourage somebody else to do what we should have done. We can't do it that way. We can't say that is the correct thing, but it's nothing wrong with your chair interacting with the chair of the NCOP that because of our constraints, we couldn't do certain things. So we encourage them to do as many public hearings as possible. You know, it's okay to do that. But I thought one was raising a proposal that committee members should respond to based on our responsibilities as this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Matali, I think I will also sit and have a meeting with the House Chair responsible for committees, Frolic, and just hear if we anything can be done, if need be, to go to maybe two or more. But I'll also brief members. Even if not in a formal meeting, I can even write an email on my interaction with both the House Chair and the NCOP Chair of the Select Committee. Honorable de Blanche.
Chair, just for my understanding, I just want to know, did anyone complain that they did not have the opportunity to come and to come here? Was there any complaints received about that?
No, I for one have not received a complaint, but I think Honorable Matali is just his concern and what he understand of the role of a portfolio committee of the National Assembly, that it should be able to go in all provinces if it can, not depend on what the NCOP would do. I think the concern is that it's more like also we know the issues better and we have the feel better. And probably, you know, the NCOP is a select committee of many committees into one. Probably they would not do justice to the public hearings compared to what, for instance, what we went through in the old assembly. And if we would have been in Goa, or Mosina, or Eastern Cape, Mthatha, or wherever is. I think that is the sentiment. Yeah.
But, yes.
I'm not suggesting that we should reopen and do other public hearings. I've said I accept this program, even though maybe we have not formally discussed it. I said no, I accept it. I just said, you know, the way we have done the public hearings, we should have done better, you know, gone to one or two provinces to you know, just make as many people as possible to interact with what we're doing. But we can submit the report based on the work that has been done. I'm not saying we have not done work. We have. It's just that I thought we could have done much better. But I'm not suggesting that we must go and open another public hearing process. It might not be, you know, time might not allow us. We can continue to conclude, but it's just a concern that, you know, we must be given resources to execute our responsibilities. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matala. I think it is an important concern, and probably also for us it was a learning curve. So we've gained experience, and we've learned, and then probably there were some shortcomings. But it is also something that I will raise in the meeting of chairpersons, so that any other committee that has got a similar problem, and then highlight also to the officials the need for more resources to committees, and especially where there is a bill before the committee, that there should be enough resources to enable the committee to do extensive public hearings. But thank you very much for your concern and raising it. And Honorable De Blanche, also thank you for the clarification and also the concerns raised. Thank you to the department for clarification and simplifying the process of the public hearings, and also providing the extensive other documents for us to go through and not just look at the summary. But your presentation and explanation were well received. Just to the committee members, there's this program that was circulated to yourself. Okay. Okay, all right. Maybe we can release the department. But once again, thank you very much for being here, for coming when we call and explaining the issue areas where we have got some concerns. But thank you for the good work that has been done.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for your support to the department in taking forward this process. I have been privileged to have attended two or three of the interactions between our team and the committee, and it's been really wonderful to see the support that we've received from the committee on this. My gratitude to all of you. Thank you very much, and good luck with the next step of the process.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas. Dr. Salete, I hope you find your other eyes. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you for your inputs, for your guidance and on how we go about on this bill. We have in front of us then the committee program that we've already started with since the beginning of the year. we actually now on end of the second page. So there will be that joint meeting on the 22nd with the Committee on Trade and Industry, and we have already written a letter to invite the minister to come and present to us or send his representative. Then the following week we'll have the legal brief, and then we deliberate and try and finalize the bill so that... so that you can then present it in the House and then can go to the National Council of Provinces. Any input on the program itself? Honorable Matale.
We support the program, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Then that then brings us to the end of the meeting. Can I ask Shanaz to speak to you?
Chair, I've just listed on the program that there is actually an oversight period 21 to 31 March. And then I also listed international study too. I think that is something that members should apply their mind to, that we should start exploring where we want to go for our international study tour. So those are the two added things. And then I maybe... on the if to take the discussion back on our ICA poll, I think if there's any Honourable Matale like an urgent area, there's nothing that stops us from actually going back to any. If there's any angle that's not covered or that didn't feature that would enhance the poll, then for that oversight period, you can even use a day or two to visit such an area where you feel. We haven't covered or we haven't had representation on.
Thank you very much. Human Rights Day, and it is on a Tuesday. So the program will start in essence on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But it's just the week that you've put there. Thank you very much. I the unfortunate thing I've written to the House Chair, bringing to his attention that as a committee we have not had a researcher since Madigani left, which is more than 2 years now. The content advisor was doubling as both researcher and content advisor, but she's also on maternity leave. And so we had requested that they should allocate somebody, but also to speed up the process of appointing or employing a researcher for science and technology. And unfortunately, this committee, you can't just take any researcher. It has to be an expert researcher in this field. So I've raised that, but I'll try and have an appointment, even in the House, speak to the House Chair on the agency of that, because the researcher should be researching areas where and countries where we would want to go. We've had a meeting the other time with the House Chair, and then there was a visit by some members of Parliament and the Ambassador and Consul General of Japan, and who also reminded us of the agreement or the memorandum that they'd signed with the department, and they would want the committee to visit. Actually, they've invited the committee to visit Japan. So for me, I just thought that probably Japan, South Korea, would be a route and probably end up in one of the countries that are partnering with us, department, on the SKA, in the continent, so that you understand how far what are they doing and all those things. But it's just a thought, and probably or another country that has got the like Australia with the SKA, but would want a researcher to research that so that you can make a motivation and present that proposal to the House Chair early. Yes. We'll ask whoever researches on that to have different options so that we can then see and finalize which one is yeah, okay. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you for your contribution. Thank you for your discussion, your input, your interaction. And this meeting is now adjourned and wishing you a blessed day. Yes.
Sorry, just one last thing. The department has written a letter to the chair where they had sought or kind of informed the committee about, I think there had been changes to their target setting in terms of that SKA thing that keep on bringing the report into, like, yeah. So they apply for that. I think it's been approved, but what I suggested or Chair suggested is that they, when they do the first quarter briefing, that they talk to us about that, so if that's okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, honorable members. I think there was also the TIA.
Yeah, we're going to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, I think on that week of the oversight, we'll also look at it. TIA want us to come and see their facility. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you.